Today is Wednesday, September the 25th. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how Big Tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a three-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, that's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. LinkedIn plans to use your data to train its artificial intelligence. LinkedIn is a business and employment-focused social media platform. It serves as a professional networking site where users can manage their professional identity, connect with others, and access job opportunities and industry insights. LinkedIn allows users to build and engage with their professional network, making it easier to connect with colleagues, industry leaders, and potential employers. It is one of the largest platforms for job searching, helping users find job opportunities that align with their career goals. LinkedIn is a vital tool for professionals looking to advance their careers, network with others, and stay informed about industry trends. Since December of 2016, LinkedIn has been a wholly owned subsidiary of Microsoft. LinkedIn users might not realize they're giving permission to the site to use their personal data and any content they create on the platform to train the company's generative AI models. But if they're in the United States, Canada, or one of the several other countries, odds are they soon will be. They just auto-opted everyone in. Updates to the company's users agreement that goes into effect November 20 will automatically opt users into sharing their data. Kalinda Reyna, LinkedIn Chief Privacy Officer, in a video update on the site said, "Some of the changes being made are to account for updates to new products and features in the generative AI space, as well as license terms that allow our creators to expand their brands even beyond LinkedIn. The update will affect a wide swath of users, including everyone in the United States." Reyna noted the company is pausing the collection and use of data from the European Union and Switzerland from its generative AI modeling. However, both regions have much more strict laws governing privacy. A quick look at the company's settings confirmed the changes. If you prefer that your information and posts not be a part of LinkedIn's artificial intelligence efforts, getting out of the auto opt-in isn't difficult, but it will require a little work on your part. Here's how to do it. Once you are logged into LinkedIn's website in your browser, click on Settings and Privacy. Under the Me tab, then select Data Privacy. From there, look under the How LinkedIn Uses Your Data header at the bottom. You'll find Data for Generative AI Improvement. Click on that and toggle the switch to Off to Opt Out. While you're in those settings, you might as well want to look at the Data Research tab, which gives LinkedIn permission to use data about you for social, economic, and workplace research. Opting out of LinkedIn's artificial intelligence training on the mobile app, what you do is you first tap your profile picture in the upper left-hand corner of the app, then Settings at the bottom of the screen. Click on Data Privacy, then Data for Generative AI Improvement. Toggle the switch to Off to Opt Out. While the new user agreement doesn't go into effect until November, a help page on LinkedIn seems to indicate data collection may already be taking place. The page reads as follows. Where LinkedIn trains generative AI models, we seek to minimize personal data in the data sets used to train the models, including by using privacy-enhancing technologies to redact or remove personal data from the training data set. Media users shouldn't have to take a bunch of steps to undo a choice that a company made for all of us. There should be legislation in which auto opt-in is illegal. The phrase, "you are the product, not the customer," is often used to describe business models that rely on user-generated data rather than direct monetary transactions. This concept is particularly prevalent in social media platforms and free services. Your personal data is used for currency, meaning the users are effectively the product being sold to advertisers. The more time you spend on these platforms, the more data is collected, which increases the value of you, the product, to advertisers. This business model raises significant concerns about user privacy, as personal information is collected, analyzed, and sometimes sold without explicit consent. Understanding this dynamic can help users navigate their online interactions with greater awareness of how their information is used and the true cost of free services. Kaspersky, the anti-malware software, deletes itself, installs Ultra AV antivirus without warning. Starting last Thursday, Russian cybersecurity company Kaspersky deleted its anti-malware software from customers' computers across the United States and automatically replaced it with Ultra AV's antivirus solution. This comes after Kaspersky decided to shut down its U.S. operations and lay off U.S.-based employees in response to the U.S. government adding Kaspersky to the entity list, a catalog of foreign individuals, companies, and organizations deemed a national security concern in June. On June the 20th, the Biden administration also announced a ban on sales and software updates for Kaspersky antivirus software in the United States starting September the 29th, 2024, over potential national security risk. In July, Kaspersky said that it would begin closing its business and lay off the staff on July the 20th because of the sales and distribution ban. In early September, Kaspersky also emailed customers assuring them they would continue receiving reliable cybersecurity protection from Ultra AV, which is owned by Pango Group, after Kaspersky stopped selling software and updates for U.S. customers. However, those emails failed to inform users that Kaspersky products would be abruptly deleted from their computers and replaced with Ultra AV without warning. According to many online customer reports, Ultra AV software was installed on their computers without any prior notification, with many concerned that their devices had been infected with malware. "I woke up and saw this new antivirus system on my desktop, and I tried opening Kaspersky, but it was gone. So I had to look up what happened because I was literally having a mini heart attack that my desktop somehow had a virus which uninstalled Kaspersky somehow," one user said. To make things worse, while some users could uninstall Ultra AV using the software uninstaller, those who tried removing it using uninstalled apps saw it reinstalled after a reboot, casting further concerns about a potential malware infection. Some also found Ultra VPN installed, likely because they had a Kaspersky VPN subscription. Not much is known about Ultra AV besides being part of the Pango Group, which controls multiple VPN brands, for example, Hotspot Shield, Ultra VPN, and BetterNet, and Comparitech, a VPN software, which is a VPN software review website. If you are a paying Kaspersky customer, when the transition is complete, Ultra AV protection will be active on your device and you will be able to leverage all the additional premium features, Ultra AV says on its official website on a page dedicated to this forced transition from Kaspersky software. On September the 30th of this year, Kaspersky will no longer be able to support or provide product updates to your service. This puts you at substantial risk for cybercrime. A Kaspersky employee also shared an official statement on the company's official forums regarding the forced switch to Ultra AV, saying that it partnered with antivirus provider Ultra AV to ensure continued protection for U.S.-based customers that will no longer have access to Kaspersky's protections. Kaspersky has additionally partnered with Ultra AV to make the transition to their product as seamless as possible, which is why on 9/19, U.S. Kaspersky antivirus customers receive a software update facilitating the transition to Ultra AV. This update ensured that users would not experience a gap in protection upon Kaspersky's exit from the market. The company states that Ultra AV has a similar feature set to its products and asks customers to review FAQ page on Ultra AV's website or contact its support team for more information. A Kaspersky spokesperson was not immediately available for comment when contacted. Windows 10 and Windows 11 users must be on high alert with pop-up windows. There's a worrying new alert for Windows 10 and Windows 11 users, and it's definitely not a warning PC users should ignore. The latest caution to affect those using these hugely popular operating systems come from the security team at McAfee, who say they have spotted a new type of attack that uses the trusted CAPTCHA pop-up alerts to infect devices. CAPTCHA in CAPTCHA. Most laptop users will be well aware of the CAPTCHA windows that appears now and again in a bid to confirm that users are real people and not system attacking robots. These "Are You Human?" alerts aren't anything new. Most of us are fully accustomed to clicking the "I'm not a robot" box to continue browsing. However, it appears cyber crooks are now using this platform as a way of infecting unsuspecting Windows users with data stealing malware. According to McAfee Labs, the attack starts with a fake CAPTCHA window that appears during the browsing sessions. It looks pretty harmless, but it packs a nasty and very vicious surprise. Once the pop-up opens, a message appears with the usual "I'm not a robot" button. However, once this is clicked, a malicious PowerShell script is copied to the clipboard, which users are then prompted to execute by following some simple pasting instructions on the screen. Along with this attack taking place via fake websites, McAfee also says attackers are sending out emails as well as with links to websites where the same installation process takes place. By leveraging fake CAPTCHA pages, attackers deceive users into executing malicious scripts that bypass detection, ultimately leading to malware installation, McAfee explained. The use of multi-layer encryption further complicates detection and analysis, making these attacks more sophisticated and harder to prevent. If you are worried about this new type of attack, then it's wise to avoid unofficial websites or internet pages that offer free streams or cheap game downloads. Always verify URLs and emails, especially from unknown or unexpected sources, and restrict clipboard-based scripts and disable automatic script execution. Finally, it's a good idea to keep antivirus solutions updated and actively scanning for threats. I may also add that with this high alert, make sure that you are doing your regular backups. The Wall Street Journal reports Qualcomm approached Intel about a possible takeover. Qualcomm wants to buy Intel. On Friday afternoon, the Wall Street Journal reported Intel had been approached by fellow chip giant Qualcomm about a possible takeover. While any deal is described as far from certain, according to the paper's unnamed sources, it would represent a tremendous fall for a company that had been the most valuable chip company in the world, based largely on its x86 processor technology that for years had triumphed over Qualcomm's ARM chips outside of the phone space. The New York Times corroborated the report on Friday evening, adding that Qualcomm has not yet made an official offer for Intel. If a deal were made and survived regulatory scrutiny, it would be a massive coup for Qualcomm, which re-entered the desktop processor market this year as part of Microsoft's AI PC strategy after years of dominance in mobile processors. Intel, meanwhile, is arguably in its weakest position in years. While many of its businesses are still profitable, the company announced substantial cuts, shifts in strategy, and a 15% downsizing of its workforce this August after reporting a $1.6 billion loss. At the time, Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger said the company would stop all non-essential work and has since announced it would spin off its chip-making business, a part of the company that it had long touted a strength over rival AMD and the many fabulous chip makers that rely on entities like Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing to produce all of their actual silicon. Intel, too, recently had to partially rely on Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing to produce its most cutting-edge chips as it continues to rebuild its own manufacturing efforts, the costs of which are responsible for most of Intel's recent losses, and its own 18A manufacturing process reportedly ran into some recent trouble. While Intel's chief rival, AMD, also had hard times over the years and had to claw its way back, gamers helped AMD every step of the way. Aside from the Nintendo Switch, whose processors are made by NVIDIA, every major game console for the last decade has featured an AMD chip, and Intel reportedly lost out on a chance to change that with the future PlayStation 6. Intel also recently lost some faith with PC gamers after two generations of its flagship chips were found vulnerable to strange crashes, though Intel has since agreed to extend the warranties by multiple years and issue updates that could prevent damage. Many of Intel's woes are about silicon leadership, not just manufacturing or profits. The company isn't a big player in AI server chips yet, as NVIDIA dominates, nor even necessarily a notable small one like AMD. Even its attempts to produce its own GPUs for gamers and creators have yet to impress. And while Qualcomm, AMD, and Apple are all still smaller players in laptops, Intel has now twice overhauled how it makes flagship laptop chips to combat the growing threat of their seeming battery life and integrated graphics advantages. We are waiting to see if its new Lunar Lake chips succeed in October and beyond. Well, are you ready for this? Microsoft releases a new Windows app called Windows App for running Windows apps. Windows App replaces Microsoft Remote Desktop on Mac OS, iOS, and Android. Microsoft announced today that it's releasing a new app called Windows App as an app for Windows that allow users to run Windows and also Windows apps. It's also coming to Mac OS, iOS, web browsers, and is in public preview for Android. On most of these platforms, Windows App is a replacement for the Microsoft Remote Desktop app, which was used for connecting to a copy of Windows running on a remote computer or server, for some users and IT organizations, a relatively straightforward way to run Windows software on devices that are not running Windows or can't run Windows natively. The new name, though potentially confusing, attempts to sum up the app's purpose. It's a unified way to access your own Windows PC with remote desktop access turned on, cloud-hosted Windows 365, and Microsoft Development Box systems, and individual remotely hosted apps that have been provisioned by your work or school. This unified app serves as your secure gateway to connect to Windows across Windows 365, Azure, Virtual Desktop, Remote Desktop, Remote Desktop Services, Microsoft DevBox, and more. This is from the post from Microsoft Windows 365 Senior Product Manager Hilary Braun. Microsoft says that aside from unifying multiple services into a single app, Windows apps enhancements include easier account switching, better device management for IT administrators, support for the version of Windows 365 for frontline workers, and support for Microsoft's relayed RDP short path, which can enable remote desktop on networks that normally wouldn't allow it. On Mac OS, iOS, and Android, the Windows app is a complete replacement for the remote desktop connection app. If you have remote desktop installed, an update will change it to the Windows app. On Windows, the remote desktop connection remains available, and the Windows app is only used for Microsoft's other services. It also requires some kind of account sign-in on Windows, while it works without a user account on other platforms. For connections to your own remote desktop equipped PCs, Windows apps has most of the same features and requirements as the remote desktop connection app did before, including support for multiple monitors, device redirection for devices like webcams and audio input and output, and dynamic resolution support so that your Windows desktop resizes as you resize the app window. Pending before Congress, Safety and Privacy Protection Acts, Kids Online Safety Act, with the acronym KOSA, and the Children and Teens Online Privacy Protection Act, with the acronym COPPA, C-O-P-P-A 2.0, are two significant pieces of legislation currently being discussed in Congress aimed at enhancing the safety and privacy of children and teens online. These bills have garnered bipartisan support and are poised to bring substantial changes to how online platforms operate. The key provisions of the legislation for COSA, this act allows states to bring civil actions against online platforms that are perceived to harm minors. It specifically targets platforms that provide community forums for user-generated content. The legislation introduced new regulatory powers for the Federal Trade Commission, that's the FTC, which could impose content filtration requirements aimed at protecting minors. This could lead to increased operational costs for small businesses and raise concerns about First Amendment rights. Then with COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, which is the Children and Teens Online Privacy Protection Act, this updated version of the original COPPA aims to strengthen protections for children's online privacy by regulating data practices that could be harmful to youth. The act has been described as a response to the growing mental health crisis among youth, with provisions designed to limit data collection practices that may contribute to this issue. Critics argue that these bills could significantly erode the liability protections currently enjoyed by websites under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This could lead to a chilling effect on free speech and innovation online, as platforms may become overly cautious in their content moderation practices to avoid potential legal repercussions. Moreover, the potential for every state to take action against online platforms could create a fragmented regulatory environment, complicating compliance for businesses operating across state lines. The ongoing discussions around COSA and COPPA 2.0 highlight the tension between ensuring online safety for children and maintaining a free and open internet. As these bills progress through Congress, their implications for both users and online platforms will be closely monitored. YouTube will now show you ads even when you pause a video. Over the past few years or so, ads have become rampant on YouTube, which is a major concern for many consumers, considering that the platform offers the biggest video service with very few notable competitors. This has become a nuisance for many, to the point that people have increasingly begun to resort to leveraging ad blockers. But YouTube cracks down regularly on such software through its ad blocker detection technology. Now, the company has confirmed that it is rolling out another way to view ads, which is hopefully less intrusive. You'll now see ads even when you pause. In a statement to The Verge, YouTube's communication manager, Oluwa Folondon, confirmed that the company is broadly rolling out a new capability for all advertisers to show ads even when a viewer pauses their video. The decision for this widespread rollout is backed by an experiment that Google carried out with a smaller set of advertisers back in 2023. This experiment turns out to be considerably lucrative for Google, popular among advertisers, and apparently not intrusive enough for consumers. Pause ads don't really improve the situation. While you could argue that pause ads are less intrusive than regular ads, considering that you probably aren't actively paying attention to your screen when you pause it, but it is important to understand that YouTube has not committed to reducing regular ads in lieu of its latest change. You'll likely continue seeing regular ads along with pause ads, which means that the net result is still more advertisements. Of course, users do have the option to subscribe to YouTube Premium and get rid of ads altogether. Yeah, you bet, there's a cost. The monthly cost is $13.99 starting price point may be prohibitive for many. It seems that people who cannot afford to purchase YouTube Premium will now be forced to watch pause ads too, something that people have been complaining about already on social forums like Reddit. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and in this case, IT professionals. But this actually applies across the board. This is for everyone. And last week, I talked about burnout. At the age of 29, I burned out. I went through a particular job that demanded a lot more than anybody should have ever been demanded of. As a matter of fact, along the way, I remember that I was putting in 12, 14, 16-hour days. Let me point out to you, 16 hours, that leaves you only 8 hours of sleep and no other time for anything, including commuting and spending time with your spouse or anything like that. And I was talking to my boss and I said, hey, we've got to spread this out. And he said, no, you've actually got to put in more time. I'm like, there's only so many hours in a day. So, yeah, with burnout, there are all kinds of different physical symptoms, emotional symptoms, behavioral symptoms that people need to be aware of. They need to watch out for, not only for themselves, but for others. And it really helps that if we get along with our fellow workers and our employees and our employer, and we communicate with them and we recognize all of the symptoms of burnout. And there's way too many to really factor in here, but just a change in the person, or maybe just the person is not good to work with, and you know, behavioral symptoms like irritability, and they always feel like you always feel like they're frustrated, or if it's you, you always feel like that you are just emotionally drained and frustrated and all of that. But I want to talk about getting to that other side. So what did I do? Well, when I started to realize, hey, I'm on the verge of a collapse, I started job hunting because I was going to get out of there. I realized that that was a toxic environment, and it wasn't but a matter of a month later before I was out of there. But it took some time to really overcome a lot of what I went through when I went through that burnout period. And, you know, I didn't wind up in a mental institution or anything like that. I probably could have. We never know. But you've got to really think through some of the options that are ahead of you. And some of these include just getting physical activity, just getting exercise. And not just, I shouldn't say it like that, but that is just one of many things. Another item, start seeking out quality time with friends and family. I actually lost a few friends in that process because I didn't see them. And of course, they always say that if you can't spend a couple of months away from friends, that they were fair weather friends anyway. But there's a support structure that'll help you get through a lot of these different things if you have friends, if you keep those friends. So, yeah, I needed to, when I left there, I started spending a lot of time with my family and building new friends up. I had moved in that, just right around that same time frame. So I started to build up new friends. I started a new church with my wife and made some new friends. And that was really great. That was something that helped get me past a lot of the focus on that. I started to move more towards that life side of the work-life balance. And yet I still put in a good day. I still managed to work very hard for the company I was working for. And my boss at the time, he said, hey, look, you put in some extra overtime. You know what? Go ahead, take some time off. As a matter of fact, my boss most recently reminded me of that, not directly. I had put in a very long day, a matter of getting up in the morning at 7 a.m. and I wasn't into bed until 1 a.m. Yeah, basically the next day. And my boss reached out to me and he said, hey, look, take tomorrow off with pay. Like, okay. He sought to make sure that there was that balance. Now, along the way, one of the other things that I did to kind of overcome that burnout was I started a new hobby. And that hobby got me out and about. It got me outside. That particular hobby got me engaged in a new layer of fascination and something else that I hadn't dealt with before. It was a learning activity. It was an experiential activity. It was something I was spending time with my wife on. And we had a blast with this. Yes, there are other things that you can do along the way, but you need to always look at whatever the demands are on your time with work. What are the demands that you're putting on your IT people with work? Make sure that they are getting that balance. Make sure that things can be removed or delayed or spread out. Not every project needs to be done yesterday. Not every project needs to be done this year, this quarter, this month. Some of these things can be put off. If they're projects, you need to spread those out. Some people have a lot of operational duties. Some people have a lot of project duties. Some people have a combination thereof. So you've got to make sure that there is a balance for yourself and for everybody you're working with. Make sure that the priorities are all straight. Make sure everybody's figured out what is essential, what is not essential. And make sure that everybody, yourself and everybody you're working with, has self-care activities, rest, relaxation, and yes, a whole lot of boundaries to make sure that we get things done without burning anybody out. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Intel takes PC battery life to the next level. It's no secret that a big reason you'll find MacBooks among the best laptops is the insane battery life that Apple's machines are claimed to possess. Intel may have just snatched the battery life crown with its new Luna Lake mobile CPUs. According to a battery test released by Lenovo, its Yoga Slim 7i Aura Edition, packed with a Core Ultra 7 258V chip, lasted 23 hours and 54 minutes in a local video playback test, beating both M2 and M3 MacBooks by over 5 hours. It's a bold claim, and one that comes shockingly ahead of schedule. Laptops packing Intel's latest chip are set to go on sale. But Lenovo seems to have jumped the gun a bit with its battery test. Although Lenovo doesn't clarify if its test was using a MacBook Air or MacBook Pro, it shows a dominant lead for upcoming Luna Lake laptops. The M2 MacBook lasted 18 hours and 19 minutes, while the M3 MacBook pushed ahead to 18 hours and 32 minutes. Still, they're far behind the nearly 24 hours of battery life Lenovo laptops saw. Beyond Apple, This type of performance exceeds Copilot Plus PCs seen with Snapdragon X Elite chip, such as the ASUS ProArt PZ13. In local video playback testing, this laptop lasted 18 hours and 39 minutes, while the M3 MacBook Air lasted 19 hours and 39 minutes. The best performer in this test was seen in the Dell XPS 13 9345, which lasted 22 hours and 9 minutes. Even then, Lenovo claims its upcoming Lunar Lake laptop lasts longer. Battery life is very important to the success of Intel's upcoming generation. With the release of Copilot Plus, there was a significant bump in laptop sales, but that did not come on the back of new AI features. It was due to longer battery life. Lunar Lake laptops won't have Copilot Plus features at release, but Microsoft says they'll receive support in November through free Windows updates. Although it's always important to wait for third-party reviews, the official test from Lenovo, and one that seemingly had all three laptops operating under identical circumstances, is worth noting, considering how closely Lenovo's numbers align with other tests. The idea of 24-hour battery life on upcoming Lunar Lake laptops might be a reality. It's not exactly surprising that Intel's push ahead in battery life. Lunar Lake is a radical redesign of Intel's approach to CPUs, and it marks the first time the company is outsourcing manufacturing to chipmaker Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing. The chips ditch Intel's long-standing hyper-threading feature to save battery life, and they prioritize the efficient cores as the main driver of performance. Those two changes have massive implications for battery life. The lingering question is if Intel can keep up performance while achieving this level of battery life. Lunar Lake chips tops out at 8 cores total, which means they could struggle in heavily threaded workloads. New Windows 11 build removes ancient, arbitrary 32GB size limit for FAT32 disks. As we wait for this fall's Windows 11 24H2 update to be released to the general public, work continues on other new features that could be part of other future Windows updates. A new Canary Channel Windows Insider build release fixes a decades-old and arbitrary limitation that restricted new FAT32 partitions to 32GB in size, even though the file system itself has a maximum support size of 2TB, and Windows can read and recognize 2TB FAT32 partitions without an issue. For now, this limit is only being lifted for the command line formatting tools in Windows. The disk formatting UI, which looks more or less the same now as it did when it was introduced in Windows NT 4.0 almost 30 years ago, still has the arbitrary 32GB capacity restriction. The 32GB limit can allegedly be pinned on former Microsoft programmer Dave Plummer, who occasionally shares stories about his time working on Windows in the 1990s and early 2000s. Plummer says that he wrote the file format dialog, intending it as a temporary solution, and arbitrarily chose 32GB as a size limit for disk, likely because it seemed big enough. At the time, Windows NT 4.0 required 110 megabytes of disk space. There aren't a ton of reasons to actually use a FAT32 disk in 2024, and it's been replaced by other file systems for just about everything. As a file system for your main OS drive, it was replaced by NTFS decades ago as a widely compatible file system for external drives that can be read from and written to by many operating systems. You'll probably want to use XFAT instead of FAT32 since it has a 4GB limit on the size of individual files. But if you're formatting a disk to be used with an old version of Windows or with some older device that can only work with FAT32 disk, this tweak could make Windows a bit more useful for you. Corporate loyalty does not pay off. Job hopping gains currency among young people. 43% of Gen Z and millennial employees in Hong Kong and Singapore indicate frequent thoughts of leaving their jobs, underscoring significant turnover intention, according to a July 2024 report by Endow Us and Intellect. It's not unusual to find a Gen Z worker to have worked at three different companies in as many years. It is part of a generation that appears to be challenging the ideas of corporate loyalty. They don't think loyalty pays off. It's all very transactional. They're only valuable for as long as they see you as valuable, and if you don't learn and you don't earn, it's time to go. The situation was very different in the 80s and 90s. People were just grateful to hold a job to make a paycheck. The perspective on work has changed. Gen Z lives are not built around it anymore, and the paycheck itself is not even enough to pay the bills or buy a house. According to a May 2024 study by WorkProud that surveyed 1,000 full-time employees, only 23% of workers age 42 and under express strong interest in staying with their companies for the long term. For workers age 30 and under, company loyalty fell to 18%. These findings underscore the evolving nature of workplace loyalty, particularly among younger employees. As the younger workforce continues to prioritize factors such as work-life balance and company culture, employers must adapt their retention strategies to meet the evolving needs and expectation of this demographic. At the time when job hopping appears to be gaining currency, especially among the youth, where does that leave the loyal staff? Does loyalty pay off in the corporate world? According to Human Resources Director at Kickstart Ventures, the short answer is no. Employees who job hop are likely paid better because merit increases can only go so far, and candidates can negotiate from a position of strength when they're first joining a company. During previous generations, if you stay loyal to an organization, they'll take care of you for life. Right now, the retirement benefits are not livable for Gen Zs. In addition, job hopping early in one's career can even give candidates an edge, as they often gain more responsibility or perspective. There is, however, a stigma associated with frequent job changes. While job hopping is generally more accepted among early career candidates, for those in a senior leadership roles, demonstrable loyalty is an important quality that companies look for. Workers should weigh the advantages and disadvantages of hopping jobs, as it could be lucrative if you want to explore new career paths or pay rise. But if they do it frequently, they can also be considered a flight risk, and companies may be cautious in investing in them. It would be wise for employees to check if they are able to get the career growth from within their existing organizations through new projects or mentors before considering the decision to job hop. In a rapidly changing corporate landscape, it is clear that companies must rethink their approaches to talent retention by providing competitive salaries and prioritizing employee well-being through flexible work arrangements. They can better meet the expectations of a generation that is redefining what it means to be loyal to an employer. As younger workers continue to reshape the workplace, the traditional framework of corporate loyalty may soon become a relic of the past. Ultimately, the question remains, in a world where job hopping is becoming the norm, will loyalty ever pay off? For now, the answer appears to be no. As the new workforce paradigm signals a transformative era in how we approach careers and employer-employee relationships. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and we are in the middle of reviewing this is actually part three of a four-part series in regards to the Audio-Technica BP40, large diaphragm dynamic microphone.
And no, folks, they're not paying us for this. The BP40 is a puzzling mic because it combines attributes of different mic types into a single body.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Marty, what What are some of the different things that they've done with the design that set it apart from, we'll say, like the microphone I'm using here?
Well, one of the first things, and we've mentioned this on both of the previous episodes, is the thing that air moves to make the signal. It's called a diaphragm. It works like a drum head. You've got a diaphragm in your ear, for that matter. That is larger than usual for a dynamic mic. A dynamic mic works by creating the electricity, the audio signal, based on the diaphragm moving a coil past a magnet. It's very 1900s kind of electricity, but that's how it works. Usually, if you have a large diaphragm, it's on a condenser mic where you're changing the capacitance. And in this case, I mean, condenser mics are great if you want to listen to every detail. But you don't always want to listen to every detail, especially, you know, when somebody upstairs flushes a toilet or runs the dishwasher or the...
It comes in handy when you want to pick up the sound of the flea that's on the cat, which is next door. Yes.
And, you know, if you've got a dog in the yard, you don't, you know, it's not co-starring on the show. I want to go into some of the specs. I'll use the formal terms, and Ben can start explaining them.
Okay.
The hypercardioid polar pattern.
Okay, so that's basically, it depends on where you are. It's not a unidirectional. It's got like a heart-shaped space around the front of the microphone. And when you're in that space, it's going to have the – it's going to pick up in that kind of heart shape.
Right.
Go to the back of the microphone, it drops off heavily.
And yeah, it starts rejecting it when you go off-axis on the mic.
Yeah.
Humbucking coil for reduced EMI.
Wow. Okay, so it's got a humbucker in there. Okay, so that's usually found on, like, electric guitars. It's to reduce the hum and reduce the buzz. That's an interesting one. But I guess if you're in a heavy in a room which has a lot of electromagnetic interference, that could be good. Okay.
Could be. Switchable 100 hertz high pass filter.
That's pretty much cutting off a lot of the bass area. It's which is good for female vocalists.
But it's also good if you got hum in the background from.
Sure. Yeah. The guy next door has no muffler on his car, and you're trying to reject the sound of that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Capsule placement to assure vocal capture presence even at a distance. Now, hang on a second. 6 inches farther, 12 inches farther, 18 inches farther. I haven't changed my voice at all. I'm coming back now, but I think I'm sounding a little different.
Yeah, there's a lot of different float in there, different things it's doing. Okay.
But still, back here, I can say things. I can say things in a fairly normal, slightly loud tone, and you can still understand what I'm saying. But why make it that hard to listen, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Floating edge transducer construction.
What?
Makes me think of an old Norelco razor.
Okay, yeah. I don't know that I've heard a whole lot of references to stuff like that. Go ahead, explain that one.
Normally, the diaphragm, the transducer, is secured to the housing around it. Mm-hmm. You still are getting the transducer to move the coil enough to make a signal. But in this one, the transducer is not fastened in that way. It's got room to move, kind of like a piston, which may be one of the reasons you get compression when things get loud.
Okay, yeah.
All right, piston action. Let's see. Integrated multi-stage windscreen pop filter.
Okay. And that's just to reduce the plosives. We talked about that last week before.
Yeah. And they do it by putting multiple screens in place.
There's
a device we all tend to put on over our mics that is a screen. And, you know, formally it's a pop filter. We all call it a spit screen.
Yeah. Spit guard. Yeah.
Yeah. XLR, which is very common for condensers, mm-hmm. has an XLR connection. In fact, it's XLRM.
M?
Yeah.
What?
That's more marketing than tech. XLRM is XLR for microphones.
Okay. Whatever. Does it have USB on it?
It does not.
Okay. No. All right.
80 decibel signal noise.
Okay.
Let's see. Phantom power, if you connect phantom power, which we'll have to explain, won't damage it.
Okay. That's for a dynamic, it should never do that. It should never damage it. But yeah, okay.
Phantom power is something a condenser mic needs to put voltage across because of the way it works. SPL, sound pressure level, it can handle more than you can.
So jet aircraft, let's record the jet aircraft.
Right. Also, it has a low impedance, 450 ohm balanced output. A balanced output's kind of good because that means...
That's the XLR, yeah.
Yeah, it's also how you keep hum off the audio line because it cancels itself. The part that's high is the same as the part that's low.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer Club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, September the 26th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m., online virtual meeting, and the website is bcug.com. TED Ed Connect has a presentation looking at Westchester Geographic Information Systems where maps meet databases. Tuesday, October the 1st, 2024, meeting time is 7 p.m. In-person general meetings are back. Scarsdale Public Library, 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, zip code 10583. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, October the 4th, 2024. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Bite Computer Club meets Tuesday, October the 8th, 2024. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. New York Amateur Computer Club has a meeting Thursday, October the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, October the 11th, 2024. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And their website is limac.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to Hank at pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.